for our nation's armed forces as they prepared for the challenges of World War II. Whereas for 85 years, Fort Hunter Liggett has evolved into a premier training installation for the United States Army Reserve, spanning 165,000 acres of diverse terrain that provides world-class training environment for the active, the guard, and the reserve components of the U.S. Army. Whereas Fort Hunter Liggett enables the warrior ethos and provides maneuvering space to prepare for service members for overwhelming lethality and decisive victory, embodying the vision of peace through strength. And whereas Fort Hunter Liggett has distinguished itself as a leader in environmental and cultural stewardship, successfully balancing high-intensity military readiness with the preservation of historic landmarks like the Julia Morgan-designed Hacienda, and earning several awards for excellence in support of the Army's zero net energy and waste initiatives. And whereas the enduring partnership between the installation and the surrounding communities of Monterey and San Luis Obispo counties have fostered decades of mutual support, economic growth, and a shared commitment to the men and women who serve our country. And whereas, as we celebrate the 85th anniversary, we honor the dedicated soldiers, Army civilians, and families whose hard work and sacrifice have transformed Fort Hunter Liggett from a historic frontier into a cornerstone of American national security. Now, therefore, let it be resolved that I, John Hammond, by virtue of authority vested me as mayor and speaking on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby commemorate the 85th anniversary for Fort Hunter Liggett on January 10th, 2026, in recognition of 85 years of excellence in military training, community partnership, and the service to the United States of America. Sergeant Major, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes. So thank you, Mayor. We really appreciate it. We appreciate the support. We had our kickoff event out in January, so coming out to those events really means a lot to us. Fort Hunter Liggett is about an hour away. You might not realize how important Paso Robles is to Fort Hunter Liggett. This city is, it's very often where our families go for medical care. It's where they go for after-school activities, programs for their children. It's where the parents go for recreation. I mean, this is the closest target we have out here, right? So Paso Robles is extremely important to Fort Hunter Liggett. And we appreciate the support. Fort Hunter Liggett likes to think that we support the warfighter, and Paso Robles supports Fort Hunter Liggett. So can't be more thankful. I wanted to present you, Mayor, a coin from our 85th anniversary. So it's two-sided. On the first side, we have the Hacienda that you mentioned by Julia Morgan. And part of our mission, it says, today's warfighter for tomorrow's challenges. And on the back side, it has Lieutenant General Hunter Liggett, our namesake, so I wanted you to have that, Mayor. Thank you. So just real quick, a couple of events we're really proud to be having out at Fort Hunter Liggett. Tomorrow we will be hosting a lunch and learn. That will be on Facebook and streamed on Facebook Live. So it really is to help educate our team members and the community about Fort Hunter Liggett. Also, the 23rd of April, we're celebrating 118 years for the Army Reserve. So kind of celebrating the birthday and educating the community and our team members about Fort Hunter Liggett. And then May 2nd is our big kickoff, our big open house event. So this is our major event that we're doing. It's open to the community. We invite all of you to come out. It will be out at Fort Hunter Liggett, but you will not have to go through the gate to get onto the event. So there's no background checks, no ID cards needed. Just come on out and have a good time. We will have food vendors. There'll be bounce houses for the kids, static displays, historic era military equipment, reenactors, and we will have Two Story Road, a country duo out there performing. And at the end, we'll wrap it up with a very large and exciting fireworks show. So we hope to see you all out there at our open house event on May 2nd. Thanks again.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. I could have Jennifer Adams from Lumina come up. Jennifer? This is a proclamation, Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Whereas Sexual Assault Action Month calls attention to the fact that sexual and intimate partner violence is widespread and impacts every person in Paso Robles. Whereas Lumina Alliance provides essential life-saving services for survivors, their children, and families throughout San Luis Obispo County and including Paso Robles. Whereas sexual assault can physically injure, psychological trauma, and even death occur when the events happen. The devastating consequences of sexual assault can cross generational and last a lifetime. Whereas the marginalization of certain groups in society, including undocumented individuals, transgender individuals, and those living with disabilities, increases their vulnerability to sexual assault, and therefore, and whereas, Lumina Alliance continues to provide safe environment for those affected by sexual violence with a 24-hour crisis hotline, advocacy, therapy, transitional and emergency housing, and prevention of education with the help of dedicated volunteers and professionals. And whereas Lumina Alliance has had a dramatic increase in hotline calls by more than 30% over the past year, recognizing more than 45% of women have experienced sexual violence in the United States, which accounts for 63,000 women in San Luis Obispo County. And whereas Lumina Alliance services a bright light during dark times for survivors of sexual assault, illuminating the path towards safety and healing. And whereas the City of Paso Robles strongly supports the efforts of Lumina Alliance, how every segment of society can work together to better address sexual violence and to help survivors connect with their services. Now therefore let it be resolved that I, John Hammond, by virtue of the authority vested in me as mayor and speaking on behalf of the City Council, in recognition of important work done by sexual violence programs, do hereby proclaim the month of April to be Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Jennifer, would you like to say something?
Thank you so much, Mayor Hammond, and the entire council. Lumina Alliance was created out of a merger between RISE and the Women's Shelter back in 2021. So we've changed our names a couple times over the years, but we've been serving the community and victims for 50 years. So we greatly appreciate the support of Paso Robles and the council. I also just wanted to take a quick moment and do a shout out to Chris Beal. We have our annual fundraiser, Lumina Nights Dancing with Our Stars, coming up May 1st and 2nd. And Chris has been busy dancing. If you haven't seen her on social media, you should definitely check it out. the event is being held at Vina Robles Tasting Room, so right here in town. As of this morning or this afternoon, Chris has raised over $15,000 to support our shelters, our emergency shelters. So we're super grateful for that. If you'd like to support Chris or attend the event, you can check out luminanights.org. And just on behalf of the board, the staff, and all the survivors that we serve, thank you so much for this support.
Thank you, Jennifer. And last presentation, could I have Annie Bowski from SLOCOG? Come on, Annie. And this is a proclamation recognizing May as Bike Month. Whereas the bicycle is a viable and environmentally sound form of transportation and an excellent form of recreation, and economy, especially today with the gas prices going on. Whereas millions of Californians will experience the joys of bicycling during the month of May through educational programs, races, commuting events, trail work days, helmet promotion, charity events, or just getting out and going out for a ride. Whereas California hosts the largest segment of internationally popular bike Pacific Coast Bike Route, considered to be one of the most scenic bike trails anywhere in the world, bringing bicycle tourism in the form of hundreds of cross-country and local bicyclists each year. And whereas San Luis Obispo County offers urban and rural cycling routes popular to riders statewide. And whereas creating bicycle-friendly communities has been shown to improve citizens' health, well-being, and quality of life, to boost community spirit, to improve traffic safety, and to reduce pollution and congestion. And whereas bicycling activities and attractions have great potential to have a positive impact on the San Luis Obispo County's economic and tourism industry to stimulate economic development. And whereas the League of American Bicyclists, Cal Bike, bicycle clubs, and advocacy organizations, schools, parks, recreation departments, police departments, hospitals, and civic groups throughout California will be promoting bicycling as a leisure activity as well as environmental friendly alternative to the automobile during the month of May 2026. Now therefore let it be resolved that I, John Hammond, by virtue of authority vested in me as mayor, and speaking on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby proclaim May 2026 as Bike Month in the city of Paso Robles.
Good evening, and thank you, Council, and everyone here. My name is Annie Bowski, and I'm with the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. As Mayor Hammond mentioned, May is Bike Month across SLO County. SLO Rideshare, which is a division of SLOCOG, invites the community to get out, get active, and prioritize safe, healthy ways to get around town. With events across the county, including Bike to School Day on May 6th, which with many North County schools participating, Bike to Work Week, May 11th through 15th, and Gears and Cheers, a Bike Month pop-up at the historic Paso Robles Train District on April 15th, we're encouraging riders of all ages to participate and build a safe and active habits on our roads, whether it's a short ride around your community or your commute to work. Paso residents can find the full Bike Month event schedule at rideshare.org. Thank you very much, and good luck to Councilmember Beal with her Dancing with the Stars.
Thank you, Annie.
Yeah,
appreciate it. And then moving on to item four, we have the Police Department Annual Report. Chief Nord, would you like to come forward?
Thank you, sir. Mr. Mayor, Council Members, Damian Nord, Police Chief, here to present our yearly update for 2025. It was a pretty big year for us. We have a long night, so I'll try to keep it as short as I can, but let's get started. Or not. There we go. Oh, okay. So this slide does cover a portion of 2024, but it goes through 2025. When J20 was implemented, the police department increased its officer ranks by 21. Trying to fill 21 sworn positions was difficult, as police departments across the state and country have struggled to recruit new and lateral officers. In 2024, we tried something different and worked with a local company to create recruitment videos and directed social media outreach. As you can see, the results were amazing. Over 1 million video impressions with 212 Let's Talk inquiries, meaning people who watched all the way through and then clicked on the button to contact us. Since pushing the videos out through 2025, we have hired 25 new recruits and 6 lateral officers from other agencies. I would also like to thank HR for helping us process these applications and new hires. We got phone calls from as far away as Minnesota. We got phone calls from the East Coast. We had people who grew up in Paso Robles who saw this video and said, I want to come home. And that's what this video did. This video created a sense of home for us. And that's, you know, it's hard to explain what this community brings and what we try to do as a police department. They did a phenomenal job of doing that in that video. Yeah. With so many new employees in such a young department, we have continued to create and maintain a culture that represents Paso Robles and how special this community is. We wanted a mission and vision that staff could live by and reflects our values, dedication to this community, and who we want to be. So what better than Be Paso? With all of the new staff, you have people coming in, and we wanted them to understand who we are, not only as a community, but as a police department, and what we expect, our expectations, our values, our ethics, our morals, and what we expect them, and how we expect them to act in public. So for the P, first, we needed to be proud of who we are and our community. If you're not proud of the department you serve or proud of your community, then you're not going to give it your all. You're not going to do the things you need to do. You're not going to do the right thing when it matters. Obviously, be professional. You know, those are the two big for the P. A, accountable. But it's not just on duty. It's on and off duty. I hold my staff to a higher standard. We protect and serve. We should be held accountable, and we should be held higher to a higher standard. So that's on duty, off duty to each other, and obviously, of course, to the community. Service. This was a big one. Handle every interaction as if it were a family member. Treat everyone as though it was your family. If you do, you'll always go right. There won't be a problem. Now, mind you, sometimes there's a time to treat family a certain way too, but, you know, but that's how we want people to go to every call. Show up and act as though that is your grandmother, your mother, your sister, your brother, and show them the respect and the care that they deserve. And obviously, oh, we want to be outstanding. We don't want to be mediocre. We're striving to be the best, and that's our goal, and that's what we want to be. The photo is a picture from one of our strategic planning sessions where we gather supervisors and command staff to have very intentional conversations about how we can improve and prepare for the future. Our mission and vision statement were born out of sessions like these. Another challenge with the growing department is training. Not only for our new staff, but ongoing training for our tenured staff as well. We have addressed many of our needs by certifying officers to be post-certified instructors, which means we are able to hold training classes at the police department, saving time and money. Last year, we hosted 16 classes at the Public Safety Center that were attended by departments from all over the region. With the completion of the Joint Training Center with Fire, our goal is to increase our number of local training courses and eventually become a regional training facility partnering with Cuesta College. So the BJJ, for those who don't know, it's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. That is something that we mandate for our staff, and I cannot tell you how valuable that is when we do have to use force in the field. We have been complimented by defense attorneys on how well we have grown over the years once we started using this. We work as a team. Obviously, everyone has seen YouTube videos, the horror stories of law enforcement in bad situations. Ours, for the, you know, as good as a use of force can look, we do our best when it, and it has to do with the amount of training we provide our staff. So this is an overview, and there will be more detail in the following slides regarding stats. The staffing number does not include, we currently have 6 recruits in the academy, which will bring our total sworn to 61 upon successful completion in June. And one thing I would like to point out on this slide is our volunteers. The amount of time our volunteers donate to the police department and city is priceless. If you see any of them at the many events they attend and help with, please tell them thank you, because they deserve it. So into the numbers. There are certain crimes we can influence as a department. And as a chief, I am happy to say the crimes such as robbery, burglary, and larceny are down. These are some crimes that can be averted due to presence and proactivity. In 2025, we saw an increase of 47% from the previous year in officer-initiated activity, with almost 27,000 proactive encounters compared to just over 18,000 the year prior. We are starting to see the benefits of our staffing increasing. This slide is another example of increased staffing and proactivity with over 2,300 arrests. I need to give a huge thank you to our records division for their hard work and dedication in managing the increased workload. Without them, this process wouldn't work. As you can see, they processed over 5,200 reports in the records division. Without them, we would be sunk. So something that obviously everyone always asks about, we saw another decrease in homeless-related calls for service, although they remain the number one citizen-initiated call to the department. I would also like to thank Ashley, our homeless services manager, for her help and teamwork in approaching this challenge. So our number of riverbed cleanups, you know, hasn't gone down. The amount of amount of trash removed has not, but we're seeing the number of calls go down. And a lot of that does have to do with the teamwork that's being done between our community action team and our homeless manager. So that there is a good relationship there that is, it's helping. I save the best for last, as this is what our department loves to do, and that's interact with the community. We attend and host over 30 events every year where we interact with our community, a community that shows us so much support and love. This is a special city, and we have a special police department dedicated to keeping it safe. And these are just some of the events: Junior Giants, Santa's Sleigh, Coffee with a Cop. These are all opportunities for us to get out and engage with our community, answer questions, you know, see residents when it's not in an enforcement action or getting pulled over. This is just a chance to get to know us and talk to us one-on-one without there being something else, you know, in the way. So with that, we obviously each of you received a booklet of our annual review. That's something I do want to thank my staff very much, especially Assistant Chief Caleb Davis for helping put that together. It kind of outlines several of our, it goes into more detail of our department and our staff. There's some great articles in there. There are some hard copies over here if anyone doesn't want to look at it on their phone. But this is also, you can download it from your phone from this site. Perfect. So, any questions?
Very good. Thank you, Chief. Any questions, Chief? Okay. Chris? Comment? Sure, go ahead.
Great report. Great to see the numbers moving in the right direction. Just want to say thank you very much. Driving around, we see a lot more law enforcement vehicles out. The citizens are commenting on that. They're grateful for it. I've been able to work just a little bit with the CAT team that you mentioned. They're astounding. Keep up that good work. That's where I think they're just tremendous results. Your rank and file officers are amazing. Your staff is amazing. And your admin, your top officers. Just thank you. You've been here, what, 6 years?
Four and a half.
You've done a lot of work in 4.5 years.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Councilman Strong.
Yes, and I'd also like to add the same thanks, but also for the cooperation between you and the other departments, because so often there's signage requirements that you find out, and then they respond and give you the support you need. And it's a mutual thing. And I think that's the same way it works with the people. And that's a great thing, because it helps the people be more observant of the law and more obedient to it and understand how it helps each other. And thank you for your part in that, because you've done a great job.
Thank you, Mr. Strong.
Pro Tem Berger.
Yeah, Chief Nord, yeah, thank you for all your work. Having our staff the levels that they are right now is amazing. Been doing a great job. It's really good, because we really got some pressure on Chief Starnetta. Yeah. You're doing the best chief in the city, right? Yeah. So keep up the good work. It's great to have you.
Councilmember Beal.
Great. Thank you for the report. I just wanted to share with the community, when I did the ride-along, you know, we think of training as being very kind of, you know, you go to class, you practice and things like that. But what I observed in the ride-along is there's so much movement in the department that the training is really happening all of the time, between each of the different levels in the department. And I was so impressed with both kind of the content and the style of how information was being shared with the newer officers. I just thought the community should know that, so thank you.
Thank you.
And me too. As far as, you know, all the comments I get, Chief, I mean, it's amazing that such a respect that everyone has for your department and your leadership in the last 4.5 years has been outstanding. And it can only go, you know, to your other team members that you have. I mean, it takes a group like that to perform like you guys are. So I really appreciate that. And I really think, again, we have a great team in place. Appreciate that. We'll open it up for anybody who likes to make a comment.
Hi, Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. You can probably turn that down. I remember coming here for the first time in about 2020 with a bucket load of complaints about the police department. And what I want to, Chief Nord already knows how I feel about what he's done with our police department, but I just want to be clear, what he did was a culture change. And that is usually done through attrition and hiring. And I remember you interviewed quite about 80 or something candidates at one time. That means that he took, in less than 5 years, a police department with a very bad reputation for a decade. Okay, for a decade. Not just the one previous, but the one before that. So even though I make negative comments about the staff and their work and stuff, I just want people to really understand how hard it is to change government workers' ways. For instance, how many times did you hear, well, we didn't used to do it that way. Well, our old boss, well, Ty let us do blah, and you're asking us to do this. Well, you know what? What I would say to people when I trained for the state, that means you don't want to change. Okay, that means you don't want to change. You don't want to go with the new program. Now again, I started this off by saying in 2020, I came here with a massive, massive amount of complaints. And I, of all people, appreciate the change. And not just the change that Chief Nord did, but the change in the officers who probably didn't want to change. Because, you know, it's the way we've always done. When I first moved here, it was the cowboy way. You see one cop, you see 10 on one person. But that's not as significant as it used to be. But, you know, I just hope that our police department is prepped in the future for bicycle takeovers. That's the new deal throughout the state, where 20 to 50 kids get on a bicycle. They shut down the San Francisco Bridge the other night. Street takeovers, those kind of things. I think they're going to come our way as our roads stay clear for speed racing and all that other stuff. It was a real significant issue in Hollister, a lot of speeding, racing in between cars. So anyways, I want to say thank you. I know there are some officers in here that we've gone round and round, but I personally want to say thank you for taking your job so seriously. And let me tell you, I've tried this man. I've tried him in many different ways, and he's come out to be exactly what this city needs, a really good police chief.
Welcome, Dale.
Good evening, Dale Gustin, Mayor and Council. I'm on the Main Street Board of Directors. At every one of our downtown events, those volunteer from the police department show up, and their presence is really appreciated. I don't recall ever having a bad incident in the downtown park when we are sponsoring one. And so thank you to your volunteers.
Thank you. Anyone online? Melissa?
No, sir. Not for this item.
One last comment, Chief. I know that it was a council goal to basically make your department as strong as we can. I think at this point, I heard the other day, we're at the most officers we've ever had. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. How many total do we have sworn right now?
So with the ones in the academy, if they graduate, we'll be at 61.
61. Well done. All right. Thank you very much for your presentation tonight.
Thank you.
Next, we have the Homeless Services Quarterly Report, Ashley Hernandez. Ashley, welcome.
Good evening, Mayor Hammond and council members. I wanted to give you a lot of information today, mostly focused on our data dashboard that's available on our webpage, but I do want to promise that I'll give a more comprehensive annual overview in June, the end of our fiscal year. So as we know, homelessness is a complex issue, and over the past year, we have shifted from working with individual departments to a more coordinated citywide model. At the same time, we've recognized the need for a clear way to communicate what we are doing, what pressures we are managing, and where we are making progress. The dashboard I'll be presenting today provides a more complete data-driven view of our efforts, and it will help guide future resource decisions. At a very high level, the city is balancing three priorities: supporting pathways to permanent housing, maintaining safe and accessible public spaces, and addressing immediate public safety and environmental risks. This quarter alone, January to March, approximately 160 individuals are reflected in the county's homelessness data system, while only 75 emergency shelter beds are available. In addition, permanent housing capacity remains extremely limited, with waiting lists that can extend up to 10 years in North County. This creates an important dynamic. Even when outreach and services are working, outcomes can appear stagnant. This is not simply an effort issue, it's a capacity issue. So in response, I've helped establish the city's interdepartmental homelessness work group. That's a mouthful. Bridging together police, fire, public works, utilities, administrative services, and community services, the most important shift is that this is no longer a collection of independent efforts. It's more now a structured model built around shared goals and clear performance metrics. I want to recognize and thank many of the individuals that are here in the room today that are participating in our working group, who have worked diligently to provide accurate information to the public. Because there is no standardized data framework for city-level homelessness response across our entire nation, it's important to note that we built this framework from the ground up. Also, as the first city's dashboard of its kind in our SLO County, my hope is that this framework can also support other jurisdictions in their efforts. This work directly aligns with the city's strategic plan to address homelessness. From the outset, it was clear that the homeless services manager would need to establish baseline metrics within the first year. In response, we are operationalizing those priorities across departments by tracking movement from outreach to housing, measuring services connections and behavioral health engagements, and coordinating field response. Importantly, this dashboard establishes a baseline and gives us the ability to measure progress over time, something that did not exist previously. So to organize this work, the work group developed three core pillars: housing stability and navigation support, clean and resilient public spaces, and community safety and emergency response. These pillars reflect both the strategic plan and the day-to-day boots on the ground and the reality of the operations within the very people who work for our city, while providing a clear and consistent framework for measuring outcomes. So how does the system work? It functions as a pipeline: outreach, service connections, shelter, and ultimately permanent housing. At the same time, individuals are continuously entering or re-entering the system. Our permanent housing capacity is limited, so people exiting appear slow, creating pressure throughout the entire system. This is why progress can be difficult to see without data, and because the system is dynamic, it is not static. This quarter alone, 85 individuals were unable to access a shelter bed due to capacity constraints. And that reflects only those documented within the homeless services or homeless management data system for the county. That doesn't reflect the people that everyone, or that we, our community action team, and myself see in the riverbed day to day. So the dashboard provides both council and the community with a clearer, more complete picture of what we're doing, what pressures we are managing, and where we are seeing progress. The dashboard can be accessed through the city's Homeless Services Division webpage by visiting prcity.com/homelessness, locating the drop-down label City Dashboard, and selecting View Interactive Dashboard. The data we are reviewing today reflects a six-month period from October 1st, 2025 through March 31st, and it can also be filtered by quarter to track trends over time. The dashboard is organized in three measurement areas, and each metric includes a definition that can be viewed by hovering over directly over the metric on the webpage. So let's get into the data. The first section of the data focuses on housing stability and navigation support. This represents the front end of our system and how we are engaging with individuals and connecting them to services. It begins with outreach conducted by our community action team. From there, we track how those contacts translate into services, including behavioral health referrals with our county's licensed psych tech and housing navigation to ECHO and other critical supports such as general assistance. We then follow that progression further down the pipeline into shelter enrollments and ultimately transitioning to housing. What this shows is not just activity, but the full engagement pathway. One metric that stands out to me is the total number of services that are provided through ECHO. Over 23,000 services in just 6 months. These include meals, showers, and laundry, basic stabilizing services that are often the first step towards engagement. This highlights an important point. The system is not only about housing placements, but also about the volume of daily support that keeps happening for those who are boots on the ground. The second section focuses on clean and resilient public spaces. This reflects the city's responsibility to maintain safe, healthy, and accessible environments for the entire community. This work includes waste removal, shopping cart abatement, the maintenance of vegetation and drainage systems, with expanded vegetation management beginning next quarter. Over the six-month period, more than 100,000 pounds of debris and waste were removed from coordinated efforts such as the Blue Bag Program, Riverbed Cleanups, and Adopt-a-Street programs in the Black Oak Corridor and Riverwalk Trail. This is not a one-time effort, it is ongoing and resource-intensive work that directly impacts environmental health, public safety, and overall quality of life. This section of the dashboard helps quantify impacts that are highly visible and mostly, the most often, the calls for service that I get, that the police department gets, that we get online. So I would say it's most top of mind for our community when it comes to visible impacts. The third section focuses on community safety and emergency response. This is where we track system demand, how often emergency services are responding. It includes fire responses, medical services, water rescues, fire safety checks, and police calls for service. Most of these incidents occur in areas such as the Riverbed and the Black Oak Corridor. Across all categories, medical responses and police calls for service stand out as key indicators, and they encompass a wide range of issues, including encampments, private property, behavioral health concerns, and even welfare checks. As Chief Nord noted earlier, this serves as a broad indicator of overall system pressure. We also track weather-related safety activations, which is coordinated mostly by the county in partnership with ECHO and Paso Cares, a volunteer-based group. It's important to emphasize that success is not defined by any single metric that you've seen today. What we are evaluating are trends over time. So this is a baseline, as we continue to grow quarter over quarter, year over year, it's gonna be a way to look at, are service connections increasing? Are people getting housed? Are they transitioning to permanent supportive housing? Or are they returning to homelessness? And are environmental impacts, like the goats that we love in the riverbed, actually reducing fires, which it's shown since last year it has significantly, and whether emergency calls are stabilizing or declining. That's how we determine whether the system is moving in the right direction. To make this more concrete, I want to show you what a coordinated approach looks like in practice. I'm going to highlight two areas where I have focused efforts, the Black Oak Corridor and the Salinas Riverbed. These are areas where we have seen a concentration of activity, risk, and community concern, and where coordination across departments and partners is essential to making meaningful progress. The Black Oak Corridor, one of the most immediate concerns that was identified was unsafe freeway crossings coming out of the riverbed. We got a call with the CHP, our CAT team members, sergeants, and Caltrans, and they eventually installed a no-cut fence in the area where breaching was occurring the most. So this is a critical safety measure. I can't say it enough, because people were crossing the freeway, breaching the fence on Black Oak Drive, and there wasn't an individual who was hit. But also, if you ask many people who take that entrance onto the freeway, they say they always are super vigilant because they're worried they're gonna hit someone. So since it's been fixed with the no-bend fence, I've been doing daily drive-bys. I have not, in my field observations, seen it breached. So I'm hoping that that continues. Another ongoing issue in this area is parking. Following extensive engagement with local businesses and property owners who are here today, the police and public department are working to expand parking restrictions and signage beyond Black Oak Drive into adjacent areas. This effort is to create clear expectations, improve compliance with existing ordinance, and support both public safety and also just this overall good neighbor effort that we're trying to have in the Black Oak corridor. The third focus in this corridor is waste management. We've launched a pilot program in partnership with Paso Waste and Recycle to provide regular trash service in the area. This effort was driven directly by community feedback, again from local businesses, outreach providers, and even individuals with lived experience. The Adopt-a-Street data from Public Works shows that this area has the most litter than anywhere else in the city. So importantly, this program is being implemented at no cost, additional cost to the city, and we will be tracking outcomes alongside the Adopt-a-Street data to evaluate whether conditions are improving over time. So again, it is a pilot, and it couldn't be done without our partnership with Paso Waste, but we will be measuring. And then moving to the Salinas Riverbed. This primary focus has been on expanding direct outreach and services. So through coordination with our community action team, specifically Officer Smallwood and Officer Radigan, and the North County Homeless Network, since they've been attending all four meetings, we've identified a gap in accessible health services within encampments. This causes a high number of calls for service for folks experiencing extreme health issues. So in response, our partner Capslo secured a county grant to bring services directly into the riverbed on city-owned land. And Oxnard Family Circle, who is a CalAIM provider, is also providing CalAIM navigation services. So what makes this approach unique and one that I've never seen is often you have either street outreach or health or navigation services, but this combines all of them. So I'd like to say it's innovative, and it's a strong example of meeting people where they are and lowering barriers to engagement. It has also attracted interest from partners like SynCal Health, who are interested in potentially looking at how they can support our project, and also community health centers who can bring a primary care doctor down, maybe on a quarterly basis, to evaluate those with the highest needs. I would like to track if this is gonna hopefully reduce the calls for service, but again, that's something that we'll be looking at for outcomes. We've also expanded key programs and partnerships in this area. The Blue Bag program has been extended through the summer of 2027. At the same time, we are strengthening coordination with partners such as Echo and Earthshine. So they'll be joining us on Fridays to come out for the cleanup efforts, but also not just hand out blue bags, but use that as a soft touch point to also enroll them into Echo's program. So what's important to emphasize is that these efforts are being implemented through partnerships and external funding with no additional cost to the city. It sounds like, I probably sound like a broken record, but my goal for the city is to create value and coordinated regional approaches. And this is an example of leveraging resources and expertise beyond what the city could ever provide. So looking forward, what we know is the city's annual investment in homelessness response is approximately $1 million, funded through a mix of general funds, J20 grants, and program funding. What the dashboard now gives us is the ability to evaluate that investment more clearly by identifying which strategies are reducing emergency demand, which are improving housing outcomes, and where resources can be used more effectively. Moving forward, our next step is to continue these quarterly updates, to communicate with our community through the city, our Coffee with the City, refining the dashboard over time, advancing our targeted corridor improvements on the Black Oak corridor, and strengthening regional coordination with our county partners. So in closing, the dashboard is not the solution to homelessness. I understand that. but it's an important tool for improving how we respond to it. It helps us stay coordinated across departments, focus on measurable outcomes, and be transparent with both council and the community. Most importantly, it gives us a clearer understanding of where pressures exist, what strategies are making a difference, and where we need to keep improving. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ashley. Any questions for Ashley? Councilman Beal?
Excellent. Actually, I don't have a lot of questions. You answered them, mostly. Tell me specifically how you're collaborating and working with the CAT team and sort of what that looks like in practical terms.
Yeah, so right now, calls for service can come into either 911, they can go to the non-emergency line, they can go onto our online portals, or they can come to my email. So on a monthly, more, I would say even a weekly basis, I meet with the community action team, and we really look at high-level trends. And then from there, since they're boots on the ground, they're the people who I most trust within the city, who know everything ins and out of the riverbed, I make sure that we go out together, but then also that we're looking at what our solutions would be. So as I talk with the community, and I'm out and about, because they're really responding to ever the 300-plus calls that come, I'm thinking of how I can leverage what they feel are solutions into the community as well. So it's very collaborative approach, but then also it's really helpful to be able to go with them using like a community health worker model. They're trusted members within the riverbed, so to go out with them and meet people too.
Thank you. Councilmember Bausch.
Thank you. Just to back you up on that, Councilmember Beal and I both participated in point in time count. And I got a chance to work with you, Smokey, and Officer Mike. Don't sell yourself short. The people in the riverbed already know who you are. They respond very well to our CAT team, and that's always very impressive that they have such a good rapport and respect, I would say. I don't know that goes 100% with all of our residents in the riverbed, but by and large, very impressive. So thank you for your work and getting involved. Now, my question to you, you've told us a lot about, great report, what's going on. What's your favorite program thus far that you're most proud of?
It's hard to say, but I would say the North County Homelessness Network. It means a lot that our law enforcement is attending. They've attended every meeting, and I will share that our last meeting was yesterday. And although they didn't have a round table, people gravitated towards their table because they found such value that they're attending this community meeting for 2 to 3 hours, and they provide such a wealth of knowledge.
Right.
But then also to see that transform into our Capslow and Oxnard Family Circle project in the riverbed, we are looking at the data dashboard and we're saying medical services are high, people need access to services. And it was led and thought first by Officer Smallwood. She brought that to the forefront, and then I helped execute it. But she was the first idea maker. And then Officer Radican let them into the riverbed just last week. So I would say seeing this cross-sector group grow and transform into outcomes has been incredible, and I can't wait for the next year to look at the outcomes of how many people are going to get housed, how many people are going to get healthy.
I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the process that council's going through right now with our goal setting and vision. If you have we addressed what you see are critical needs? Have we addressed that adequately in that vision setting as we come up to the final stages?
Yes, I'm working closely with my director and Halika Fortin to address all of those.
Yeah. Good hands. Thank you.
Anyone else? Pro Tem Gregory.
Yes, great job, Ashley. I have a question for you, a couple questions. On Capslow's, container that they set down in the river for healthcare, can you describe how that works exactly?
Yeah, so Capslow comes every Friday. They have a nurse practitioner who's also just trained in general homelessness and public health come, and she does general vitals and then also does testing on site. So what we're doing right now is more of like a public health assessment or population health assessment, looking at what kind of needs are in the riverbed. And then from there, we'll be working with community health centers pending their approval to get their quarterly and say, like, this is what we're seeing. You can bring the primary care doctor that can do that con- continuity of care. At the same time, as people are looking at their services, we also have the Oxnard Family Circle, who has a whole world of services that can happen through CalAIM. They can pay up to $5,000 to get someone a deposit and get furniture to move in. They can put them in the coordinated entry that puts them in line for permanent supportive housing, shelter, et cetera. And then they can also look at their health history. So have they been to their primary care doctor? Are they working with behavioral health? Is there a pregnancy and does that need to be addressed? And then also social services. So do people have general assistance? Do they have CalFresh? And if not, maybe sometimes the first step is getting document ready. So it's really a whole person level view of one individual that looks at everything in order to get someone ready to be housed.
So are they side by side in cap, with CAPSLO during these Fridays?
Yes, there. And we'll see where it leads us, because I'd love to come back and tell you that there's been great progress.
And then how are the warming shelters been working okay?
Yeah, so the county leads the warming shelters, the Homeless Services Division. They have an email that goes out when they're activated. And that is, like I said, it was on the dashboard, but that was done and is communicated solely through the county.
And you have a warming shelter at Echo?
Yes, Echo has capacity for up to, I believe, 10. And then Paso Cares does one as well at rotating churches, and that is depending on the size of the church.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your report. Well done.
Ashley, I had a little bit of a question there. I know I worked originally, and we had a lot of complaints with businesses in the area of Black Oak Corridor with trash. And I know that I think I talked with Paso Waste, and so it looks like you've got an agreement that they're picking up at no extra cost. How many containers did they end up putting up down there on that corridor?
Right now we're looking at ADA compliance and where they would be most used. So we are working with our city engineer to determine how much clearance needs to be on a sidewalk in order to place a trash can. Once that happens, Public Works has the trash cans ready to go, and we'll send a map over to Paso Waste and get them serviced up to 5 days a week. On the same time, Adopt-A-Street is also measuring how much litter is on the floor that they're going to pick up and weigh. So we have a really good data set already of where it's been, and then now we can compare if it's reducing due to the trash cans.
Very good. Now, I want to personally shout out to Dale and Isaiah Comer and Mark Perry for stepping up and helping him with this problem. They said, yes, we're there for you. So no additional cost, I believe, too, to the city. So well done to Paso Waste. Okay, that's all I had. I'll open up to comment. Anybody would like to make a comment on this item, please come forward.
Well, good morning. Hi, Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. Ashley, that was a great report. I think that that's a great plan for the future. But what about right now? You know, the reason why I come here and talk about the homeless every opportunity I get, because it's in District 1. You're raising $15,000 for someone else, been in that seat for a year, and you went to a pit count. As we would say as kids, whoopee. So I come here because I go to that Black Oak Corner all the time too. All the time. But I'm gonna point out something important right now. It's raining. We have no warming shelter. The county just announced it. We don't have a warming center. When I was first inquiring about this, it takes the city, the county said, to call and activate a warming center. I used to send emails to Rodin, who never responded. Chris Bill doesn't respond to your emails. I don't know what you do, but what I would like to see